Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to use this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So, huge shout-out and thank you to the awesome patrons, Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., and my newest patron, Infamous Fridge, for supporting me. If you're interested in helping me make more awesome content and support the show, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Speaking of awesome patrons, I've decided to bring one of my awesome patrons onto the show today to talk about the new Innistrad Midnight Hunt set. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce my in-real-life playgroup member and awesome patron, Nick S., to the show. Welcome, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm super excited about the set, and as far as lore goes, I love lore, but I just want to talk about some cards today that I think are just underrepresented in Commander and just are like really cool or undervalued.
Yeah, definitely. That's really what this show has been all about, is trying to find some of those cards that are lesser represented in the in a lot of the EDH and like the limited discourse, and really just be able to talk about how they can kind of fly under the radar and have huge impacts at the EDH table.
Yeah, definitely. Just to start us off, I think I'm going to do multicolored spells first.
All right, let's do this.
So you got your really obvious things like the Planeswalkers and the Meat Hook Massacre. Mm-hmm. I think the top card we're starting us off is going to be Angel Fire Ignition, which has a mana value of 3, 1 colorless, and then Boros colors. Mm-hmm. It's a sorcery. Put 2 +1/+1 counters on target creature. Gains Vigilance, Trample, Lifelink, and Indestructible in Haste until end of turn. And it has Flashback for 2 colorless and Boros.
Yep.
I think this card is super cool. As someone who really likes the Boros clan, I love just throwing in a big beefy boy with Voltron equipment on it into the fray. It's just, it's so much fun. I can see so much versatility for this card. MJ, I know you have a Gisela, the one that doubles damage to your opponents and halves damage dealt to you.
The less perverted version of Gisela, I suppose, you know, given the lore, anyway.
That's right, exactly, for sure. I was running... why am I forgetting the name of her? Akiri Lineslinger, not Lineslinger. Akiri Fearless Renegade is the name. She lets you
The
draw
new one from Zendikar, you mean?
That's yeah. Right.
See, I knew this was going to happen, that we were going to forget this, so... Akiri Fearless Voyager, yeah.
Yep. I think it slots perfectly into her. I haven't played Voltron recently, but I'm kind of missing it, frankly, and I'd like to put it back together. The next card I like...
Yeah, so before we go on to the next card here, Nick, I do definitely agree with the Angel Fire Ignition being an awesome card here. This is not only the +1/+1 counters that stick around, which is nice, but you also gain all the nice relevant keywords from the Boros color pairing. You get Vigilance, you get Indestructible, Lifelink, which are a lot of the white keywords, and you also get one of Red's major keywords, you get Trample there. And while these do fall off after the end of turn, and unfortunately, since this is a sorcery, you do have to sort of telegraph your plays. Hopefully this keyword soup will not burn you in the end. And what's really nice is you also have Flashback available here, which is available to you at instant speed should you need this as a combat trick. So I think the Flashback really makes this card what it is, honestly, is the fact that you can just have that in your graveyard, and if you have 4 mana up, including 2 in the Boros colors, you effectively have a combat trick on board that people need to be cognizant of if you're going to be, let's say, swinging in on your next turn. All of a sudden, you have this threat sitting in your graveyard. It's something that I've definitely seen in the community works well with Feather the Redeemed, for instance, because it is a sorcery, and it is targeting one of your creatures, and it will return to hand at the end of your turn. And yes, Gisela would be another good option if I built her in that way. Obviously, mine's a little different, but yes, you're right. If you were building Gisela as more of a Voltron-style commander or just trying to deal a lot of damage with any of your creatures, yes, Angel Fire Ignition would be a perfect card for this, and I just really love the art with Rem Carolus on the front. So it just really makes the card for me.
Yeah. Yeah. We could talk about Rem Carolus next.
Yes, actually, since I did mention Rem Carolus, that was my that is a very interesting card right there. It looks really awesome in foil. The showcase is great, and let's move on to that.
Yeah, so Rem Carolus is one colorless in Boros colors. It's a legendary creature, human knight with flying and haste, and says if a spell or ability would deal damage to you or another permanent you control, prevent that damage. If a spell would deal damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals that much damage plus one instead. Well, this is nice. And oddly, I might have mentioned it is a 2/3. This is very reminiscent of the dwarf that increases damage by two from Throne of Eldraine.
Yep, Torbrand, Thane of Redfell.
Torbrand, yeah. I really like this card. It's like a mini Gisela almost.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the 2/3 stats aren't exactly the most amazing, but what's really nice is you have flying and haste. So, I mean, this is definitely one of those cards that in limited is really nice to have available to you because it is hard to block. You can bring it down for three on turn three, swing with it immediately. But in EDH, what I've mostly seen this for is, let's say, like burn spells. So anytime you use a shock, lightning bolt, anything related to that, you're going to be able to add plus one to any of those effects as long as it's from a spell. Obviously, it's a little different than Gisela, but again, not many things are like Gisela. So let's not compare apples to oranges here. But yeah, but it also prevents you from getting hit with a Torment of Hailfire or any relative effects such as Comet Storm. And other sort of huge game-ending effects, Aetherflux Reservoir wouldn't. It would still get around this. But I mean, if you can stop a Torment of Hailfire with this card, that's pretty good, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a modern player, so I can see this either being played in a 60 card constructed deck or in the 99 of a Boros deck, or maybe even Naya. It just it's a nice tech that like cancels out certain hate cards. Really like this one.
Yeah, and again, just like I was saying a moment ago, it just says any spell. So if you have any kind of creature that has an ETB where it pings something, well, Rem Carolus will trigger off that too. So
yeah.
And again, it's your opponent or a permanent your opponent controls. So it allows you to bring down. Again, I know the devils that like devil tokens, they have to die in order to do that. But any creature with an ETB that'll do four damage, Inferno Titan, for instance, would be great in this deck because it allows you to do six damage to any number of up to six damage to any number of targets you choose. Well, Rem Carolus all of a sudden would say you would get that plus one. So all of a sudden, I think your Inferno Titan could probably do up to 12 damage if you chose six different targets with Rem Carolus on the field.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I'm not sure about that ruling on there. Someone would have to check me on that. But I definitely see a lot of interesting little interactions there with a lot of creatures that do one damage, two damage upon entering the battlefield. This would honestly go really well with something like Terror of the Peaks.
Oh yeah, Terror of the Peaks is great.
Or
I wish I had a copy.
God forbid, Purphoros.
Purphoros, that's right.
All right, yeah, I really like Rem Carolus too there, Nick. It's a great card, and the showcase version especially just looks really killer. So but of course kind of all the showcase versions from the set look really amazing, so you know there's very stiff competition there, I would say.
Yeah. Moving on, I like Dire Strain Rampage. It's one colorless and then the Gruul colors. It's a sorcery that says destroy target artifact, enchantment, or land. The land was destroyed this way. Its controller may search their library for up to two basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle. Otherwise, its controller may search their library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. And it has flashback for three colorless and Gruul colors. So as a Lord Windgrace player, I see this. I'm like, oh, happy days. This is wonderful. It does everything Lord Windgrace wants. However, I wish it said you could also sacrifice a land that you control, because like the Gitrog monster and Lord Windgrace, as well as that one card that creates 5/3 elementals, help me out.
the landfall one? Or
you have a commander of her, mono green.
Oh, Titania.
Yeah. Titania like sacrifice. It's that specific keyword. This is very Hansa like land destruction, but it just has like it works in so many good ways. I just would just love to slot this into every Gruul deck I have, frankly. Do you have any thoughts about this one?
I guess I'm curious before we move on here, Nick, would this be something in a Lord Windgrace deck where you consider using it on one of your own lands?
Potentially.
To ramp yourself?
Because it doesn't say sacrifice, I'm hesitant, but I do really like that enter the battlefield for lands. It triggers landfall twice, and like there's all sorts of landfall effects in my deck that could really capitalize on that. And just in general, I like having lands in my graveyard because I can just bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like a deterrent in any way.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little overcosted to be something like sacrifice a land, especially as since you did bring up my Titania deck, I do have other ways to be able to blow up my own lands, sacrificing the crop rotation type effects.
Yeah,
to be able to blow up a land. And this just seems kind of overcosted for doing something like that, especially since you could cast Harrow at instant speed. And so I'm not sure necessarily where I sit on this one, but if honestly in the Gruul colors, if you're going to be destroying someone else's land, then I definitely see this as being far more playable, at least in my opinion, is blowing up someone's Maze of Ith, Urborg, Cabal Coffers, you know, the usual rogues gallery of non-basic utility lands. This is a pretty good option for being able to do that for 3 mana, especially since that's really what Gruul does. And it also hits enchantments too, which is something that red typically doesn't do. So I feel like this could definitely slot in. A little overcosted on the flashback, but again, I don't think I'd be all that concerned about that, just because you kind of have that ability. So I suppose I'm a bit on the fence on this one personally, but since it does give you that modality, I think that really is what helps it make it playable.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, especially since something like a Nature's Claim or Naturalize can't hit a land, whereas this can hit a land. So I think that's the difference right there. And you don't have to necessarily slot in one of the land destruction lands, the strip mines, Wasteland, Dust Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. You can have a sorcery that'll do that for you without having to utilize basically a spell slot in your lands.
Mm-hmm. I would frankly take out a Naturalize or some other form of artifact or enchantment removal for Dire Strain Rampage, because if you're not destroying a land, you do get to ramp anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's the otherwise effects there. So yeah. I think I do agree with you that the flashback is overcosted, but paying 3 for destroy target artifact or enchant at sorcery speed and then ramp 1 seems pretty good to me.
Oh, yes.
All right. The next card I want to talk about is Flesh Taker, which has just really, really wonderful flavor. Silence of the Lambs folk will understand why I'm
seeing that in my nightmares, honestly.
Yeah. Flesh Taker is 1 white and 1 black for a creature human assassin.
It's a 2/2.
2/2 human assassin. Yeah. It says whenever you sacrifice another creature, you gain 1 life and scry 1. And it has 1 colorless, sacrifice another creature, Flesh Taker gets +2/+2 until end of turn. So I play Gave Gurov Spores, and I've gotten some feedback from my group that effects like Zulaport Cutthroat and potentially Blood Artist are really strong. So I was like, I could still play into that aristocrat style of play, but without punishing my opponent so much. Additionally, I don't think I have a ton of life gain, so this one is perfect for me. You're producing so many saprolings in Gave that, and like sacrificing them, that just being able to like scry and gain life and filter through your deck is really useful. Not only that, it's a sac outlet itself.
Yeah,
I
do agree that, especially since it is our play group that we see Zulaport Cutthroat in sometimes. Yeah, this definitely kind of brings a different, I'd say, element to that kind of Blood Artist, Zulaport Cutthroat type effect, because it's giving you the opportunity, and it, giving you the opportunity to sacrifice another creature, but it's not all death triggers. Because again, the important is whenever you sacrifice another creature, you gain one life and scry one. So again, it really promotes the self-sacrifice bit versus the Blood Artist, where you could, in theory, blow up everyone else's creatures and really harm the board too. So it definitely changes the way that you're looking at that kind of effect. Since we're looking at the Orzhov color pairing, and that's a pairing that's very dominated by sacrifice effects versus maybe more like the mono black Rakdos style. Self-sacrifice. At least that's how I look at it. And then the built-in sacrifice outlet right there is really interesting too. Is it allows you for the one mana to build a sacrifice another creature, give it +2/+2 until end of turn. Maybe not the best way to do this. I mean, there are a lot of good free sac outlets. If you had a way to build around this card, I could see giving it the +2/+2 for the sacrifice effects. It could definitely put in some work. I think it would require a little bit of workarounds on this one. I think that's definitely why this card is underrated in a lot of ways, is that it doesn't necessarily scream, play me. But if you're going to be sacrificing creatures anyway, you might as well be running this for 2 mana, because it's going to be allowing you to have that nice Viscera Seer type scry ability, but it's also gaining you one life, which Viscera Seer doesn't. So it takes a little bit more setup, I think, to really be able to get that. And I think that's definitely why people aren't talking about it as much, because it doesn't have that free sac outlet like Carrion Feeder or Viscera Seer has attached to it. But if you're playing in Orzhov colors and you're going to be sacrificing creatures anyway, or in your case there, Nick, you're playing Obzon, this is definitely one of those cards where it slots right in. It'll give you some incidental life gain, some scry, and if you have to use it, it is another sac outlet. So I do agree that this is... It's going to depend on your strategy, depending on what you're trying to do. But if you are sacrificing creatures and you need another sac outlets, 5, 6, 7 deep, then definitely give Flesh Taker a look.
Yeah, for sure. How are we doing on time? We're a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. So let's keep on going.
Let's move on to green. There's a lot of cards I like in green. I'm going to talk about Storm of the Festival. It is a 6-mana sorcery, 3 colorless and 3 green. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put up to two permanent cards with mana value 5 or less from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest onto the bottom of your library in a random order. And it has flashback, 7 colorless and 3 green. So this one is a little overcosted, but like it has a lot of versatility. I played a toolbox deck in Modern, and being able to just find that miracle card, not literally miracle, but like the one you need in a situation, is really valuable. I was thinking of putting this into Hans Ericsson, because you could just grab stuff for the enter the battlefield effect.
Thoughts
about this one?
Yeah, it's you're right. Is that this is definitely one of those cards where it has kind of a barrier to entry, I suppose, in the fact that it's costing 6 mana, but it does have that really nice Rishkar's expertise like effect stapled to it. Is it? It's any permanent card. So if you end up whiffing on something good, you could always play a couple of lands out of this too.
Yeah, but, and I might have actually misread it. It doesn't say have a combined value of
mana. Yeah, so
you can actually get 2 big creatures out of this.
Obviously they'd have to have a CMC mana value, et cetera, et cetera, of 5 or less. So, you know, you're not going to be able to really get one of the giant hydras in, let's say. But, this has the potential to really be good in green stompy, where you're going to be trying to get large creatures out anyway. And if you have a bunch of creatures at the 4 or 5 mana value slots, this would be perfect for getting those out there. But like I said, you can always just run out anything from a mana rock to a land if you absolutely have to. I think what may hold this card back a little bit is it's the top 5 cards of the library. If it was maybe the top 7, I would see this being seeing a lot more play, just because you get access to an additional 2 cards. And but the flashback is nice. I mean, it's expensive, so you really have to mean it for 10 mana. But, you know, by the time especially in our meta, if you get to turn 11, 12, sometimes that might be enough to really tip the balance. And you can also do that instant speed to get around the summoning sickness bits because you can activate it on someone else's turn. So the flashback does give it a little bit of additional versatility. It's just, you know, adding four more mana, unfortunately, makes flashback really hard on this one.
Yeah, for sure. What I will add is this card becomes better if you're running it with cards like Augur of Autumn, which lets you look at the top card of your library, or maybe even Rada, Heart of Kilt, which lets you look at the top card of your library and play lands from the top. If you're just constantly manipulating the top cards of your library, that's the way to bring this card to, like, bring it to its highest value possible.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Having some top deck manipulation really makes this card work. But, you know, again, the usual brainstorm type effects, the Divining Top, Rada, et cetera, Courser of Kruphix. Yeah, those really make this work well.
Yeah, for sure. I just got a copy of Marin in foil, so I'm really looking at Deathbonnet Sprout. It's one green mana for a creature fungus. The beginning of your upkeep, mill a card. Then if there are three or more creature cards in your graveyard, transform Deathbonnet Sprout. Transforms into Deathbonnet Hulk. The beginning of your upkeep, you may exile a card from your graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, put a +1/+1 counter on Deathbonnet Sprout, Deathbonnet Hulk. So this is a bad crab effect. So I'm thinking the crab from Zendikar that mills either yourself or an opponent, and then the most recent one from Zendikar Rising, which is mills each opponent not targeted. So it doesn't fill your graveyard as effectively, but in a deck where you're like milling yourself, you're going to pitch some things you don't particularly want, like lands and artifacts, etc. So it acts a little bit scavenging ooze, in which it grows bigger. It doesn't gain you life, but turning a one CMC card into a 3/3 that just quickly becomes a threat on the board is kind of nice, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do agree with that one, especially since a lot of the cards that do allow you to mill, I'm thinking of, besides Obsessive Stitcher, Stitcher Supplier, my bad. Obviously one black to then mill yourself three cards. But if you're thinking about cards like Nyx Weaver or Satyr Wayfinder, those do cost two or three respectively. Well, Deathbonnet Sprout does allow you to mill that card on turn two effectively. If you can get a single green down your first turn, you can play this. All of a sudden you have a 1/1, and you know, by turn three, if you drop that Wayfinder, let's say on turn two, now you have a 3/3 on turn three. And if you have other little abilities to be able to exile your creature cards from your graveyard, yeah, you can definitely make this an early game threat. I feel like it kind of fits in the same vein a bit as Delver of Secrets does, which also was reprinted in this set. Is it just with instant sorcery, just with this being a creature card based thing? But yeah, if you build your deck right, this could definitely be a nice little one drop to give you that repeatable mill in the early turns.
Mm-hmm. And one thing people forget about reanimator decks is you're not always trying to reanimate threats. Just like having something die, something small, like Spore Frog is an example, or creatures that have like an activated ability where you pay mana, sacrifice it, and then search your library for basic card and ramp. Those are good targets too. So I could just see bringing Deathbonnet Sprout out like repeatedly for blocking if need be, and just that mill effect.
Especially in a Marin deck, as you just mentioned, because Marin just loves to be able to bring these kinds of creatures back. Obviously, once you get to 5/7 experience counters, you may not be wanting to bring Deathbonnet Sprout back out. You may have other threats available, but it's a nice early turn option to be able to just get out there, start milling yourself, and then give you a nice playable 3/3 very quickly that can pump itself up.
This next card is probably my favorite in all of Innistrad Midnight Hunt, and that is
Outland Drum Liberator. Drumroll, please!
It is, has a mana value of 2, 1 colorless and a green, for a creature human werewolf, and has an activated ability. 1 mana, sacrifice Outland Liberator, destroy target artifact or enchantment, and it has Daybound. It's like a bear, it's a 2/2. I personally think it's better than Reclamation Sage, not better than Knight of Autumn, because that just gives you some, you can like Buff Knight of Autumn, gain 4 life, or destroy target artifact or enchantment on ETB. But what I do like about it is that it's like a strict upgrade to Casali Pride Mate, which is a 2-mana 2/2 with essentially the same ability, and it has Exalted. This just slots into so many more decks. And then it transforms into Frenzied Trapbreaker, creature werewolf. So it has that same activated ability, one and sacrifice it, destroy target artifact or enchantment. But whenever Frenzied Trapbreaker attacks, destroy target artifact or enchantment defending player controls. So looking at this immediately, I say, oh, it's an attack trigger. That's infinitely better than it having to deal combat damage to opponent's face. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I do agree with you, Nick, is that this is a really nice card. It's 2/2 for 2/2. Again, you do get the bear body, so it's nice value right there. You do have to pay it and sack it to destroy a target artifact or enchantment. But again, we already have something like Thrashing Brontodon in EDH, which costs one more and has the exact same effect. So this is all of a sudden already better mana value than that is, let's say. Obviously, this is probably going to slot in more decks since it's a human werewolf. Again, I'm not going to say anything about the Brontodon because that's not really relevant here. But the fact that it can then quickly transform into Frenzied Trapbreaker if no one's cast any spells. I think in EDH, the Daybound, Nightbound is a bit challenging to get to work because we do try as players to play something on every turn if we can. But if you're lucky enough to be stuck after someone who's playing more of a control deck where they're leaving their mana open, then Frenzied Trapbreaker is definitely a really great card. 3/3 has that exact same ability, like you said, but just on the attack trigger. That is where this card really sets itself apart, is the fact that, you could run it into the biggest creature ever, and you're still going to get that trigger. And honestly, and you could even get a 2-for-1 on this one because you can attack, and then if it's going to die anyway, you can pay one and sacrifice it. Well, the attack trigger has already gone off. So you can actually blow up two things just by attacking with the Frenzied Trapbreaker.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't tinkered around with Daybound, Nightbound enough. In a control style deck, I know Temur and Sultai, as well as Simic, are really popular. You will be holding mana up early game sometimes for counter spells, and just being able to like plop this down early and maybe just pass, like keeping 3 mana up as a threat.
Yeah. I really do like this card, especially when it flips into Frenzied Trapbreaker, because again, you can hit two things with this if you absolutely have to. I mean, you're going to sacrifice it, but on the attack trigger, if it runs into something with more than 4 toughness and more than 3 power or 3 or more power, it's going to die anyway. So you have the ability and the flexibility to be able to blow 2 or even just 1 thing up. That's really a nice value. And then if you can keep it around using things like Heroic Intervention, et cetera, all of a sudden this starts becoming an every turn effect. If you can keep the Trap Breaker around, and there are definitely a lot of ways in the set to try to mess around with Daybound, Nightbound, you can get a lot of value off this card. I really like this pick.
Yeah. I think we should move on to red.
All right, moving on to red.
All right. I just want to name this card, not because it's especially good, but people are calling it Nightling Bolt, Lightning Bolt, that if it's nighttime, it costs 1 mana instead of 3 mana.
He's so excited about the card, folks, that he's forgotten what it's called.
yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'll just go to this one. This one is already overrepresented, but I just want to name it just because of how good it is.
Okay.
This is Bloodthirsty Adversary. It's 1 colorless and a red. It's a creature vampire with haste. It's a 2/2. Whenever Bloodthirsty Adversary enters the battlefield, you may pay 2 colorless and a red any number of times. When you pay this cost one or more times, put that many +1/+1 counters on Bloodthirsty Adversary and exile up to that many target instants or sorceries with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard and copy them. You may cast any number of the copies without paying their mana costs.
Oh, that's wrong.
It is wrong. It's good in burn. This card is insane. It has, there's so many decks it can slot into, frankly. What are cards that you can think of that would just be good abusing with
Well,
this?
I mean, you can just use Lightning Bolt if you absolutely had to. If I was going to run it, obviously, since I'm also a big Boros player and also really into mono white, I would think of running things like Flawless Maneuver, Make a Stand, just the things that give all your creatures indestructible are really nice. Or, something even worse, you could even run something like Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile, or just any of the exiling effects to just mess with your opponents, because it is any instant or sorcery card with mana value of 3 or less. There are just so many cards in really any colors that do a lot of cool things. If you're pairing this with blue, you can do a whole lot of interesting little draw spells. You can do the cantrippy Brainstorm, Ponder, even some of my favorites, Frantic Search, you could do this with. Do this with something like Faithless Looting. Be really nice if you're playing mono reds. You can all of a sudden just start digging through your deck, Thrill of Possibility. One of my favorites, Honor the Godfarer, which is really nice because it gives you an additional 1/1 body every time you use it. So is it. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of value to be gained here, especially since it has that multi-kicker clause without being multi-kicker, but effectively that's what it is.
I just wanted to respond to you talking about Boros, because most Boros decks have like a Sunforger like pot of cards that you play. It's usually Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares, Boros Charm, etc. Because of how many instants or sorceries are in a lot of Boros decks, I feel like this is like a must-have in many of those.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with you on that one because you're going to be, and even if you aren't necessarily running Sunforger, like I personally don't run Sunforger in any of my decks, but I do run a lot of those low mana value instants and sorceries. You could even run our first card from this from this segment too. You could definitely run. Just have to find it again. My words are failing me again. I will find it. I'll find it. Angel Fire Ignition. You could even pull that off with this.
So I did find the card I was thinking of. Moonrager Slash. It's two colorless and a red. Instant, this spell costs two less to cast if it's night and deals three damage to any target. So that, just to get that out of the way, because I was hitting myself over the head for forgetting it. I want to talk
Yep.
about Burn Down the House. Just
Burning down.
recap.
It's now time for our Talking Heads segment with David Byrne.
That's right. This is three colorless and two red. Burn Down the House. Oh, it's a sorcery. Deals five damage to each creature and each planeswalker. That's important. And then you can also choose the other option, which is create 3/1/1 red devil creature tokens. When this creature dies, it deals one damage to any target. They gain haste until end of turn. So I have a Jury Master of the Review deck, and this is functionally very similar to Hour of Devastation, except creatures don't lose indestructibility. But having the option to choose sweep the board or create like more targets for an aristocrat style deck and that ping is just really nice. I really like everything about this card and the flavor, of course.
Yeah, that's. It's a very good card because it has the modality. I always think of a similar card in Goblin Rally, which is one more red, or sorry, one more colorless to get four goblin tokens on there. So this is really, I think, the going rate for getting three devils if you choose to go that way, which the devils are really nice to have, not necessarily because they have more support, I'd say, than the goblins I just used in my example, but just because they do ping for one. Again, talking about Rem Careless earlier. Burn Down the House would really work with Rem quite well if you chose the first mode on here, which is the five damage to each creature and each planeswalker. But yeah, being able to hit planeswalkers is something that we don't necessarily see on mass burn spells. We don't see that on Blasphemous Act. We don't see that on Anger of the Gods. All of those Earthquake, for instance, just all those classic board sweepers in red, you don't hit planeswalkers. So this really, and since we do have a few planeswalkers running around in our meta, it's nice to be able to have that ability to be able to knock them down a peg, especially if we're afraid to try to swing in with our creatures. So again, the modality we've seen on a lot of these cards over the last year, year and a half has been really nice. And Burn Down the House is definitely one of those kind of sleeper cards that definitely could see more play. And if you're interested in picking that up, it's currently about 50 cents. So make sure to pick up a copy or two before that starts going up.
This next card is for the mono red players out there. Cathartic Pyre. It's one colorless and red for an instant. Choose one, deals 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker, or discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards. It shows someone burning the Avacyn crest. I love this card personally. So for listeners of the pod, you may have or may not know, but Wizards R&D has changed red card draw from, like, let's say Faithless Looting, which is draw 2, discard 2, they like it when there's either a cost of playing it, like Cathartic Reunion, Tormenting Voice, etc., or you have to discard, then you draw those cards. I guess it's, is it called Impulse Draw?
Well,
is that right?
No. Impulse Draw is when you exile cards. It's the Outpost Siege kind of effect where you physically exile a card. What this is more of the rummaging, I think is what it's called, because it because it comes out of things like the Goblin Rummager that I used in our game last night, actually, is that you discard a card, then you draw a card off that, or my Anja Falconrath deck, for instance, which does a lot of that with Madness cards, is that you're tapping it, discarding a card to draw a card. So yeah, red is really good at discarding cards up front, while, you know, well, things like blue, for instance, are going to be draw card, then discard card, Frantic Search, etc., or like you said, Faithless Looting.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't see playing this card unless I'm in mono red or Boros, but it is particularly good in those two colors. I know Madness is really popular. MJ was playing Anya Falconrath the other night, and being able to discard cards for the Madness cost is very important.
Yes, it really is. I think what's interesting about Cathartic Pyre here is that I'm going to compare it, and I know people have already compared it to a Braid, but it's very similar in the fact that both of those cards can deal 3 damage to a target creature. But again, Cathartic Pyre does have that Planeswalker clause on here where you can effectively Lightning Bolt a Planeswalker. Now, again, yes, you could utilize a Lightning Bolt for the same thing and hit your opponent for one less red, or for one less generic mana, but again, the ability to then have the Faithless Looting stapled onto this, I think, is really what sets it apart, both from Faithless Looting and from a Braid or similar effects. The fact, again, that this is a modal card allows you to utilize, and an instant, allows you to utilize this whenever you need to. I think this is definitely one of those cards where it might start entering, or if it hasn't already, the Fringe CEDH conversation, actually, because it does give, and because a Braid is a, I don't want to say a staple there, but is a very popular card in some of those metas. And Cathartic Pyre does allow you to refill your hand if you have to, or have the Braid cost for the exact same effect, just without being able to blow up an artifact. So I think that this is definitely a card that could be seeing more play over time. Again, I'm not sure if the card discard and drawing is really going to make a huge difference, since we already have Faithless Looting and they just came out with another version of that in this set, I believe. But the fact that you can discard even one card and draw a card off this if you absolutely have to, it's still nice. So I think it's going to be deck dependent, but yes, in a mono red deck where you're going to be wanting to have some modal options and you're going to want to have some card draw, if you have some discard synergies, this is in some ways better than Faithless Looting.
Right. So we probably need to move on to the next color, but I just want to give an honorable mention to Curse of Shaken Faith, which is one colorless and a red, and its enchantment Aura Curse. I love curses. Enchant player. Whenever enchanted player casts a spell other than the first spell they cast this turn, or copied spell, Curse of the Shaken Faith deals 2 damage to them. This is targeted hate, obviously. it's very situational, but I just wanted to give a shout out to that one.
Yeah.
What a black. This is my favorite black card, probably, next to Meat Hook Massacre, which is also very overrepresented, and I'm sure you already know
and,
about that one.
Well, I haven't talked about that on the podcast, but the fact that it costs $30 to $50 right now proves that you're not alone in thinking it's a good card.
Yeah. So Lord of the Forsaken is 4 colorless and 2 black for a creature demon. It is not legendary. It is flying and trample, and it's a 6/6, so that's already a pretty good rate. But it has 1 black, sacrifice another creature, target player mills 3 cards, and pay 1 life, add colorless, spend this mana only to cast a spell from your graveyard. It doesn't say creature, it's a spell. So this card is, I think, totally busted.
Oh, it totally is.
I'm running it in my Orzhov Angels deck with life gain. there's just so many silly situations where you just be like, I just need Lord of the Forsaken right now. Since our playgroup runs a lot of board sweeps, being able to recover from having your board destroyed is really important. Mm-hmm. And if you just draw into this, you can just bring everything back.
Yeah, I have seen this card be in on a lot of the CEDH discussions that I've at least been privy to the last couple of weeks, or at least since the set got released, because the ability to pay one life, I mean, there's a reason Gristlebrand is banned in our format, right? So the ability to just be able to pay life at instant speed to add colorless, it's just so good. We've talked about how many cards in the set have already have flashback, right? Well, the ability to be able to utilize your life as a resource, which Black wants to do anyway, to all of a sudden be able to fuel your ability to be able to flashback any card. There's just so many interesting things you can do with this. Just so many combos you can pull off. Or just, you know, really good value plays, if nothing else, by utilizing this card. And it doesn't say everything has to have flashback either. These could be anything that allow you to cast a spell from a graveyard. You could even, I mean, obviously Gravecrawler, you would have to have a black. But, you know, if there was just any kind of card that has a Gravecrawler type ability where you can cast it from your graveyard, Lore of the Forsaken allows you to really undercut that mana cost. It's almost like running a reverse Bolas's Citadel, I suppose, is that you're kind of paying life to be able to get resources. It's a little different, but just... It's a really good card, and I know that people probably much more in the know than me have found ways to just completely break this. So, yeah.
If I was on R&D, I'm surprised they didn't give it a tap effect for one of those activated abilities.
Yeah, that and if nothing else, a 6/6 flyer for 6 with flying and trample, that's never a bad thing for a demon. And then also the ability to have a sac outlet on it as well to self-mill. Yeah, that there's just so much good with this card. It's currently a little bit over $2 on TCG Player right now. Obviously, your prices at your local game store might change a little bit, so definitely check in with them on that. But yeah, I think this is definitely a card where people have been sleeping on this. I do agree with you, Nick. This is a really good pick.
Yeah, let's pick this one up. You won't regret it.
Next, well, I will in whenever I play your Orzhov Angels deck, I'm gonna be cursing that we talked about this.
That's right. I like this one. It's a human wizard, Jadar, ghoul color of Nephalia, one colorless and one black, for a legendary creature, human wizard. At the beginning of your end step, if you control no creatures but Decayed, create a 2/2 black creature with Decayed. So I saw this and I was like jumping with glee, because it's very similar to Ophiomancer, but it doesn't trigger on every player's end step. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, Ophiomancer is a rather expensive card, only having been printed in one set. I believe that was Commander 2014.
Sounds about right, yeah. And the snake token finally got printed in the Commander Collection Black.
That's right. This thing, if you have a sac outlet, creates a 2/2 token, which you can sacrifice every turn. It's just so much value here. And because I can, like, throw this into Jury Master of the Review and just, like, keep, like, repeatedly having a reliable sac or token generator, I just love this card. I would even consider running it in... there's Will Heltz, the new Zombie Commander, Scarab God. Oh man, there's so many. Zombie Tribal that creates a lot of 2/2 black tokens and can capitalize on this likes Jadar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like it as a token generator. MJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I do agree with you. Again, it's a little slow, but if you have ways to be able to get zombies on the battlefield, it works. Decayed is a little interesting because it can't block, and when it attacks, you have to sacrifice anything in combat, but I don't really know how much you're necessarily going to be attacking with those zombies. I mean, again, it's going to depend on the deck. I think that this is ultimately my verdict on this card is going to be mostly on what you're going to try to do with the deck. If you're just trying to get some bodies out there, there's definitely a way to be able to get creatures out there. But if you also have some creatures with Decayed, it won't do much. So I think you really, again, it's one of those legendaries you have to really build around if you're going to be trying to run it as your commander. But the value is really nice to be able to guarantee yourself a card, or at least, sorry, not a card, but a creature every turn, especially since Decay just came out. So if you're not running any of the new cards that have Decayed on them or allow you to create Decayed zombies, you're going to be getting something every turn off of this. And then being able to drop this on turn two, potentially, well, all of a sudden now you have two creatures, power three total, three power, three toughness on turn two. That's not bad.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with you. It's certainly situational. I like it nonetheless.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the underrated cards we're talking about here are underrated because they are so situational. I think as EDH players, again, I have talked about this on the podcast a lot before, is that good cards are talked about a lot because they are just objectively good. They just scream, play me, in the text box, and that's why they are very highly rated, very highly regarded. So when we try to find cards that are a little bit out of the ordinary, we have to try to find some situations where there are some corner cases where the card is terrible. There are some corner cases where the card is absolutely amazing. And I think we kind of have to figure out exactly what we're trying to build and then see from there. Again, Lore of the Forsaken is not going to work in every deck. If you don't have cards in your graveyard that you can cast, that ability is effectively useless to you. Jadar, again, you really have to build around this card. It might be better than the 99 for a lot of builds. But again, this is the never-ending cycle of what we go through as EDH players when we try to build new decks, trying to find out something a little different to scratch that itch of trying to have a unique deck. So now that that's out of the way, Nick, let's move on to your next card.
Yeah, this is Morbid Opportunist. A 3-mana creature human rogue with 2 colorless and a black for a 1/3. Whenever one or more other creatures die, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. So it doesn't make you lose life like a lot of die triggers. I'm thinking, oh man, I'm blanking. But usually Black likes to say, when a creature you control dies, lose a life, draw a card, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not quite the same as, I know what you're thinking of. It's the Death Knight.
Yes.
Yeah. You see, I knew I was going to forget this card, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. The whenever a creature dies, you lose one life, draw a card type creatures.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also the zombie version of that, which essentially does the same thing, but for zombies.
Yep.
I really like this card. It's you would run this in addition to those other ones. It's not better than them. I think it's strictly worse, but just having like redundancy in EDH, especially because it's a singleton format, is very important in my opinion, and I'm sure you would agree.
Oh yeah, definitely.
What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I do agree with you. Well, this isn't the best version of this effect. We're not looking for the best version of the effect. This is a good redundant card for that sort of strategy. And since it's whenever one or more other creatures die, it doesn't have to be on your board necessarily. You could have a sacrifice outlet, sacrifice one of your creatures, you get a card. If someone else's creature gets, I don't know, defenestrated from this set here, which just destroys a creature without flying, well, all of a sudden that
out the window.
Yeah. That'll trigger this. You could even get rid of your Novice Occultist, which will draw you a card and lose a life when it dies. You know, just little things like that, that it can give you some extra little value, especially since Midnight Reaper. That's what I'm thinking of. I think that's only your creatures that die, it'll trigger. So what's nice about Morbid Opportunist is that it's anyone's creatures, and it's just once each turn. Well, in a 4-player game, if people's creatures are just dying in combat, or, you know, someone's decayed zombie creature just dies after you have to sacrifice it, well, all of a sudden Morbid Opportunist becomes better than Midnight Reaper, because you're getting that card no matter whose creature is dying. So while it only triggers once, there's definitely some ways to be able to boost your value, but also you're even just like in our meta, for instance, creatures are dying all the time. You're not going to cash in on a huge board wipe like you would like to with the Midnight Reaper, let's say. But if someone else just loses a creature or two, creature here, creature there, you're going to draw some cards. So I feel like the corner case on this one, it has, in some ways, I think it has a bit of higher ceiling than something like Midnight Reaper. It just kind of depends on how the game plays out and how you build your deck.
More potential for sure.
Yeah.
Well, there is other cards I want to talk about. Let's go to blue.
All right. Actually, before we go to blue, I do want to give a shout out to something that I did see Dana Roach of the EDH Rec cast, as well as I can't remember his other podcast off the top of my head. I will remember it later. But he did make a post a few weeks ago about Mask of Griselbrand. It's a legendary artifact equipment for one black. Equipped creature has flying and lifelink, which is already really nice. Two relevant keywords that you would typically see on a demon. But what's really nice about it is whenever equipped creature dies, you may pay X life, where X is its power. If you do, draw X cards, and has equip cost of 3. There are some interesting synergies you can do with something like this in the way that you can kind of get a repeatable necropotence of type effect off of this card. It costs a little bit, but the fact that he has lifelink, if you can swing, I don't know, your Lord of the Forsaken in twice, let's say, you gain 12 life. When it dies, if you have any ways to boost its power or anything, all of a sudden you can pay that life back. You can draw a whole bunch of cards. So again, big corner case right here. It does have a lot of setup. Again, the equip cost is a little bit punitive depending on the type of deck you're trying to do. A little bit better in our meta since we like playing a lot more Battlecruisers, slower magic, etc., etc. But yeah, this, if you have some ways to be able to pump your creatures and be able to have some life sitting around, this is not a bad card to at least take a look at. Is it going to be an auto-clued? No. But in, let's say, like my Selenia deck, for instance, where I like messing with my life total up and down, well, all of a sudden, Mask of Griselbrand could be utilized to sacrifice, or when one of my larger creatures dies, all of a sudden I can pay some life, draw a whole bunch of additional cards, and, you know, this card sticks around and has some really good utility because flying and lifelink are never going to go out of style. So if you're looking for kind of my sleeper card from this set, I really think Mask of Griselbrand is definitely one of those cards where it's only 43 cents right now if you're just going to get the original copy. It's a rare, so, and I don't think it's going to really go up much. So if you're looking for a card to kind of speculate, look on, I would say that'd be my pick from this set, at least in black.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I bought 4 copies of it. So Lear, Disciple of the Drowned, is 3 colorless and 2 blue. For a legendary creature, human wizard, it's a 3/4. Spells can't be countered. Each instant in sorcery in your graveyard has flashback. The flashback is equal to that card's mana cost. Mm-hmm. When I see this, I'm like, oh boy. The opportunity, the options. There was speculation on the Magic subreddit that, I don't know if it's a he or she or they, but they have a necklace, and it looks like it has tentacles on it. Does Lear worship Emrakul and the Eldrazi? Who knows? But specific hate cards like these are really great. I don't personally play blue, but I know during spoiler season, a lot of blue players were frothing at the mouth when they saw this. Oh man, giving everything flashback. That's just too good.
Yeah, just it also has another line of text saying spells can't be countered, including your own counter spells. So
that's right.
Lear is a very interesting card. It's 3 blue. So it's a little bit costed. Blue doesn't do the best at ramp. So, I mean, you kind of have to figure out exactly when you're going to want to play this. And when Lear is on the battlefield, you also can't run a lot of counterspells. Honestly, your counterspells are turned off. So how I would personally build this is I don't really run a lot of counterspells in any of my decks running blue. I run just a couple, 1-2 here and there, just to make sure I won't lose the game to some kind of game-ending spell in our playgroup. But for the most part, I just really love the ability to give instants and sorceries flashback. Just the ability to play anything from a Ponder, a Brainstorm, to just any kind of weird blue effect. You know, just any, even a Polymorph would be really cool in this kind of deck, just because you can pop that off anytime you need to trade in a token or something for a big beater. Yeah, just, there's so many different ways to build this deck, and the clause of spells can't be countered. That's no joke. Being able to turn off counter spells, especially in the higher powered metas, that's really why people got excited about this card. I don't know if people are as excited now about it, but I know that my friend Chris, your commander mechanic, did a video on this a little while back about basically running a counter spell less mono blue deck and just trying to figure out exactly how you can try to abuse the second part of the card while also knowing that you can't counter anyone else's stuff and knowing that they can't counter yours. So kind of an interesting effect that really fits kind of in White's color pie a little bit with some of the more recent effects we've seen, like Silence, Ranger Captain, etc., etc. But yeah, just a really interesting card, and I think it's going to take some time to see how this really plays out in EDH specifically. I can definitely see this being more of a 60 card format card for the time being.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the cards I'm naming in the set aren't catch-all cards, but they're like really good at one specific thing, and that's what I'm trying to narrow in on.
Yeah, definitely. Again, the card's about $6 right now. I'm not really sure if that's going to go up or down. I think it's really going to depend on if it catches on the 60 card formats, but there'll always be home for an EDH. I can see a lot more of these decks coming out here where you start kind of going away from counter spells and blue and just trying to try out some interesting strategy. I know that there's a lot of interesting blue spells I'd love to play around with that would go great in this sort of deck.
What do you want to talk about next? Sludge Monster or Triskaidekaphile?
Ooh, Triskaidekaphile. Since we're talking about the super spooky Innistrad set, let's talk about the number 13. So Triskaidekaphile. Yeah, so
here's more opportunities for Dimir players to shine with their strange alternate win cons. Triskaidekaphile is a 2-mana human wizard. It's a 1/3, one colorless and a blue. You have no maximum hand size. I'm looking at you, blue players. The beginning of your upkeep, if you have exactly 13 life in your hand, you win the game. There are 13 cards in your hand, yes. And then it has activated ability, 3 colorless and blue, draw a card. Yep. So compared to Triskaidekaphobia, I'm just looking that one up.
Yep. Enchantment for, I think it's 2 and a black, and then every upkeep, it will allow everyone to either lose a life, and then all players at 13 life lose the game, or all players will gain 1 life, and then same clause for person with 13 life will die on the spot.
Yeah. Cards in hand versus life total is the big difference between these two cards. And I personally would run both Triskaidekaphile and Triskaidekaphobia in the same deck. Tree of Perdition is how you trigger Triskaidekaphobia. But being able to discard cards down to 13 or just like manipulate the number of cards in your hand, I think this is actually an easier win condition.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that one, because there's so many ways to draw cards, so many ways to discard cards, just, you know, for any sort of effect. Like, again, in Dimir, like last night with my Anja Falconrath deck, which isn't Rakdos, but Zombie Infestation. Discard 2 cards from your hand to create a 2/2 zombie. Well, you can do that at instant speed. So if you have, I don't know, 17 cards in hand all of a sudden, you can ditch some cards to that, and if you have another discard outlet, that's great, and you're down to 13, you win the game on your upkeep. So yeah, I do agree with you, Nick, that this is I'd say an easier one, just because there's a lot of ways to discard cards and draw cards, whereas it's a little bit harder to mess around with life totals and get them exactly down to 13, especially since you're only with Triskaidekaphobia only moving everyone up one or down one, and then it still has that pesky upkeep clause too. So Yeah, it's This definitely created a rift in the community when it came out. People were really excited to see the sort of effect return, as well as just this being a really abusable card if built right. Plus then that 3 and a blue draw card effect, if you just have it as a mana sink, that's not the worst thing either. I mean, Spectral Sailor has been doing that since it came out in M20, and it does a really good job at that. And the fact that you can have this plus no maximum hand size for just an additional 1 mana, I mean, that right there makes it just about as playable as Spectral Sailor. So,
for sure.
Yeah, even if you're not just necessarily looking for that alternate win condition, this could just be a solid value creature, too.
Yeah, just the clause you have no maximum hand size might just make it an include in some decks I have, case I don't have an extra copy of Reliquary Tower.
Yeah, because we all love our Reliquary Towers and Thought Vessels and the like, and Triskaidekaphile does allow you a redundant effect there, plus a bit of a mana sink, and if you can, a win condition. And it's also on a 1/3 for 2, so, you know, blue specialties, 1/3s for 2, it's not the worst blocker either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Dimir doesn't have, like, the beefiest creatures in the world, but they have, like, really resilient creatures that can like stick on the battlefield and like stay untapped so you can block. Keep in mind, everyone, that you're in a four-player game in that you don't have a ton of control over your life total, but you often do have control of the number of cards in your hand at any time. That's why I'm really fond of this card.
All right, moving on.
Sludge Monster got a lot of hype early on, but it is a bulk rare, I must add. Kind of reminds me of Ixodron, which flips everything over into 2/2s.
Oh, Ixodron. The bane of our playgroup about a year ago from my end.
Sludge Monster is a 5/5 creature horror for 3 colorless and 2 blue. Whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, put a slime counter on up to one target creature, so you can choose nothing. Non-horror creatures with slime counters on them lose all abilities and have base power and toughness 2/2. I love this card. I can't tell you how often I see something with indestructible and be like shaking my hand, man, I wish I had a raven form or something.
Avacyn. Right.
cop. It's a pretty good rate. It feels like Curse of the Swine almost.
Yeah.
The blue always, when a blue removal is unique in that it doesn't typically destroy them outright, it gives them something in exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very flavorful that it's just giving them a useless slime.
It's an ooze. Yeah.
Ooze.
Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, I do agree with you. It's fun. It's just kind of one of those things where it's not going to be overly powerful. There's no reason why it's ever going to be, you know, a heavily played card, you know, at least in the higher powered circles. But yeah, it's one of those cards that, you know, MJ here loves to play. Just kind of those silly effects, doing really dumb things. I mean, what's cooler than a slime counter? I mean, Magic is great at coming up with random counters for random things, especially back in the day, and a slime counter just seems so, you know, slimy. And then the ability to just turn off abilities and base power toughness is never to be underestimated, especially if you can find ways to get multiple triggers off Sludge Monster. Things like Strionic Resonator are great for this.
Yeah. I think the only thing I want from this card is I wish it was a horror ooze so it could go in ooze tribal, but
yeah,
frankly, it's good enough for me and I can't complain.
Yeah, a little costed at 5, you know, for 3 blue and being, but it is a 5/5, so, you know, it might survive combat. You might be able to get a couple activations off this, and if nothing else, it forces your opponent to use a removal spell on it. So I guess it's actually some kind of nice bait for pissing off your opponents too.
All right, this other one has gotten some talk before, but this is Otherworldly Gaze. It is a 1 mana instant for 1 blue. Look at the top 3 cards of your library, put any number of them into your graveyard and the rest on top of your library in any order, and it has flashback for 1 colorless and a blue. I see this being played more in Constructed personally, but if you are a Muldrotha player or you like playing Sultai, this card is for you. Because it's kind of like a brainstorm effect, again, you're not drawing cards, but the ability to manipulate the top cards of your library and pitch the ones you don't want is really nice. I thought about putting this into my Dimir Zombies. I ended up opting in for something else instead, and it has flashback. That's just really good.
Yeah, the flashback on here is really nice because you, with things like Impulse, which are already out there, or again, I can't remember the other one that off the top of my head that does the same thing with the top 3 cards. But yeah, the fact that you can dump some stuff in your graveyard and, you know, put the rest on top of your library, it's also really good for the typical Yuriko type effect where you're trying to set the top card of your deck too without having to throw anything to the bottom. And then, yeah, the flashback really makes it work, especially since it's only for 2. So
it kind of reminds me of Ransack the Lab a little bit.
Yeah, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we'd be remiss without mentioning Consider, which people were also going bonkers over when this card was revealed. It's just an instant for 1 blue. It says look at the top card of your library, and you put that card in your graveyard and then draw a card. So effectively surveil 1 and draw a card for 1 mana.
Yeah.
It's may not be the most EDH playable outside of maybe the highest power circles where you may want to be doing something like that with expensive reanimator pieces. But again, just one of those cards that it's like Opt, but it also allows you to help you mill yourself while still drawing the cards. So again, just really, it's going to depend on what you're looking to do, but it's, they have some really nice effects, and it's interesting to see blue going more towards self-mill with this set. It's not something that blue has necessarily been the best at, especially in comparison to black. So it's interesting just to see blue try to do more of these kinds of effects based on what we've seen in the previous Innistrad trips with various madness effects. And before we get out of blue here, I also want to call out Suspicious Stowaway as well. It's a 1-1 human rogue werewolf for one of blue. It can't be blocked, and whenever it deals combat damage, you will loot. You're going to draw a card and then discard a card, and has Daybound. And on the flip side, so you will be having to play this in Simic or anything playing blue and green, you get Seafaring Werewolf, which also cannot be blocked, and then when it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card without having to discard a card there. So if you're playing both these colors and you're going to be just trying to get in a whole bunch of damage, this card works really well. Actually, this would work really well in like an Edric deck, the not non-banned one, the one where a creature deals damage to an opponent. You will be drawing multiple cards off both of those, as well as Derevi would also really love this if you're going less towards like a stacks route and towards more of just a flying men type combat damage creature centric strategy, because this can't be blocked and also allows you to draw a card. There are a lot of creatures in blue, especially rogues, that can avoid being blocked, but they don't necessarily draw you a card without things like Reconnaissance Mission, Trade Routes, etc. Or sorry, Coastal Piracy, my bad. But this right here, if you're playing green, and that's the kicker here, is you have to be playing green to be able to use Seafaring Werewolf. You can, no matter what side it's on, you're going to at least get that card draw. So I feel like in those kinds of Bant colors, as Derevi and Edric are, this is a really good include for both of those sorts of decks, and it's only about 30 cents right now.
Yeah.
Moving on to white, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's do it.
The first card is Enduring Angel. It's a 5-mana creature angel. It's a 3-3, two colorless and 3 white. Maybe a little overcosted, but it has flying, double strike, and it says you have hexproof. Your life total will be reduced to 0 or less. Instead, transform Enduring Angel and your life total becomes 3. Then, if Enduring Angel didn't transform this way, you lose the game. It flips into Angelic Enforcer. Flying, you have hexproof. Its power and toughness are equal to your life total, and whenever it attacks, double your life total. This reminds me a lot of Platinum Angel, or that one angel that brings your life total back to 40.
Yep.
Oh, just a little different. It's a spin-off of that. when it was first spoiled, people were like, oh god, the art is not very good. She looks like a sphinx. I put this in my Orzhov Angels deck because I just really like all the keywords on it, and that's such a unique effect. Sometimes in online play, people don't read the cards on your field very often. So if I put this on the field and like I just take lethal damage, it flipping, and then one of my opponents being like, "Wait, it does what?" might catch them off guard.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how that text works, so... yeah.
Yeah. It always swings for 6, which is nice. 6 or more, to be exact.
Mm-hmm. Because it has double strike?
Yeah, because it has double strike. Any thoughts about this one?
Yeah, that's a very interesting effect. It's just, I think it's worded a little weirdly.
It is.
That's the problem for me, but... Effect seems good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not much to say about this one. I just like what it does, frankly.
Fair enough.
But this next one is definitely making a splash in Commander. Sigarda Splendor, just 2 colorless and 2 white. It's an enchantment. And this is the first time I've ever seen this, but you note your life total when it enters the battlefield. Beginning of your upkeep, draw a card if your life total is greater than or equal to the last noted life total for Sigarda Splendor. Then, note your life total. Whenever you cast a white spell, you gain 1 life. So, I didn't expect Wizards of the Coast to go this route when it came to white card draw, but I'm quite happy it did go this way. Because white has such a propensity, or like enjoys life gain so much. This is a really, really excellent card. I like the Soul Sisters personally. Mm-hmm. All three of them. And running this in a humans deck where you're just having enter the battlefield effects going off one by one and creating human creature tokens and then having your Soul Sisters trigger would be nice. I see this drawing you a lot of cards potentially, but it's definitely one of those things. It's not a catch-all, might I add. It does slot into a life gain deck really well, but you have to be consistently gaining life. Mm-hmm. It's not about the amount of life you gain, but just like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a little tricky to be able to pull off, but you know, the fact that it does allow you to draw cards for doing what you're trying to do anyway in a life gain deck seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to point out before we go on to the next one that there is a pseudo new Soul Sister and Lunark Veteran as well. 1/1 for one, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life.
And it flips into...
Yep, has a disturb for one and a white, and when another creature you control leaves the battlefield, you gain one life with the Luminous Phantom. So... just another thing where if you're going to have some creatures entering the battlefield, some creatures leaving the battlefield, it's going to give you some incidental life gain, especially for one mana. So this is a nice little addition to life gain decks that are creature heavy.
And I'm glad you mentioned people are calling him Soul Mister. You can grab all of the Soul Sisters and the Soul Uncle with Knight Captain of Eos or Ranger Captain
Eos, yeah.
Yeah, just having one on the board at all times in a life gain deck is really important, I think, because you're just capitalizing a bit, specifically the other two that gain life whenever a creature enters the battlefield and not Lunark Veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But just the other day, I had someone resurrect all creatures from all graveyards onto the battlefield, and I had two Soul Sisters out, and I gained like 22 life or something. It was nice to say the least. I know people really like this card. Oh, why is it in Italian? Okay, Adeline Splendid Cathar. It's one white for a legendary creature human knight. It's star 4 with vigilance. Its power is equal to the number of creatures you control. Whenever you attack for each opponent, create a 1/1 white human creature tapped in attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. Now, this is just silly. Kind of reminds me of the sleeper agent. You know, this would be a funny build around Commander. I'm personally a token player and I just like creating a shit ton of tokens. It's not creating tokens for you, unfortunately. What do you think about this one?
I think this is a really good card. I mean, my good friend of the show, Mono White Border, really likes this card. So if he likes it, I'm kind of forced to like it too. So Peter, I do like this card. I promise. I'll build this, I don't know, but I know you've been working on this. But yeah, it's a really interesting card. It kind of reminds me a lot of Lena Selfless Champion a bit, is that you're trying to build a large board and then get some value off it, except that Adeline is trying to do something different. It's very attack-based, where Lena's a little different, I suppose, just in the way the card is worded, but it does also functionally work in a similar way. It's nice that you're able to get a 1/1 human creature token that's tapped and attacking that player. It's basically like having Myriad on one of your creatures in a way. And, I mean, I suppose you could give... Well, actually, no, Myriad would not work with Adeline, unfortunately. But, yeah, there are some interesting ways you could build around this. I would have to work on it a little bit. But, yeah, this is definitely an interesting commander. But, again, even in the 99, too, if you're running Human Tribal, for instance... This gives you additional humans to then pump up with your other creatures and other enchantments as well. So, I mean, it's a good commander. Definitely works in 99 as well.
I want to shout out God Eternal Oketra. And I think it only belongs in the 99 if you're running God Eternal Oketra as your commander. Just like a white weenie strategy where you're just creating a bunch of cheap white creatures and creating 4/4 black zombies.
Yep, Adeline will trigger God Eternal Loketra's ability to give you a 4/4 black zombie, and then you're going to be able to get a whole bunch of little tokens out of this attack as well. And it's whenever you attack. Adeline doesn't have to attack. It's any creature, any opponent. though it does help to be attacking multiple opponents any given time to get the extra tokens. So,
for sure, definitely.
I feel like this card, you could play it in mono white, or you could play it in any number of combinations in the 99 of colors here, too. It seems like any kind of token strategy be great, any kind of human tribal strategy be great, no matter the colors, or just any kind of token strategy. If you're running green, let's say you have the token doubling effects in both of the colors, you could all of a sudden start really spamming the board with creatures and copies of creatures. Blue would be great at copying this. Yeah, try copying Adeline with Sakashima, let's say. Well, that starts getting really scary. Yeah.
And then there's the white Blasphemous Act called Vanquish the Horde. Six colorless white for a sorcery. Costs one less for each creature on the battlefield. Destroy all creatures. We all know that white is really good at killing things and destroying the board. It's just a very welcome include in any white deck. Mm-hmm. I honestly feel like I will put this in every white deck I have if it goes down in price.
Yeah, it's currently $5.
And do you have time to talk about artifacts?
Yeah, the price on this one might go up because it's very unique. Because even Blasphemous Act, it may not necessarily kill your opponent's creatures. Because 13 damage, especially if you have something like Rem Careless on the battlefield across from you, it won't kill anything. Well, Vanquish the Horde doesn't care about that. It's just going to blow everything up no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm,
so that's one of those things that I think is really nice about this. And again, I want to give another shout out to actually a couple of cards here. I really like Flare of Faith in a human tribal deck. It's an instant for one and a white. Reads target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. So it's a nice little white combat trick. But if it's a human that you're targeting, instead it gets +3/+3 and gains indestructible until end of turn. I just really like
it. Redeemed, yeah.
Yeah, in a human tribal deck here, it's a really nice combat trick to not only be able to give your creature a nice little buff for just 2 mana, but also to be able to give it indestructible. So let's say Adeline is attacking. Well, all of a sudden, it gets +3/+3 and vigilance and indestructible. I just really like that kind of ability to have available if you're trying to swing in, let's say, with a Voltron commander who's a human as well. Just anything, as long as it's a human, I just really like the boost and the indestructible off this one because people are not going to expect some common combat trick to come down a mono white. I just really like this card. Second one, I want to give another shout out to Mono White Border for Gavni Dawnguard. It's a 3/3 human soldier for 1 white, has ward 1. If it's neither night nor day nor night, it becomes day as Gavni Dawnguard enters the battlefield. And whenever day becomes night or night becomes day, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with mana value 3 or less from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. What Peter pointed out about this card a little while back is that there's just so much value oozing from this in the fact that day and night will change no matter if it's your turn or not. So if someone plays over 2 spells, night will turn back in day. If no one plays any spells, it'll go back to night. Well, all of a sudden, Gavni Dawnguard is going to trigger no matter what you do, in which case you can all of a sudden start chewing through your deck quite rapidly in mono white, to be able to get a whole bunch of low value or low mana value creatures into your hand while basically filtering through your deck. Plus then the fact it's a 3/3 for 3 as well as having ward 1, there's some really nice synergies you can build around with that, and especially even in a human deck, but just any deck looking to try to get some creatures into your hand, the ability to filter through your deck while just playing the game and while other players are playing the game is really nice.
Mm-hmm. I listened to one of your episodes a while ago, and you were talking about white card draw. Well, this isn't explicit card draw. It is card draw to some degree, and I don't think this card should be undervalued at all.
Yeah, it's
that being said,
it's more card selection and card advantage, I suppose, is that you're not necessarily drawing a specific card, like, you know, draw a card, but you are getting that nice filtering effect. And that, in a way, in some cases, is better than just blindly drawing a card, and depending on your situation. And the fact it's repeatable is really nice. Now, you have to be running enough creatures for, I guess, this to really be worth it. But in a white weenie strategy like Adeline, This card's 11 cents, people. If you're playing Adeline, I feel like this is almost an auto-include. I don't say that a lot because I don't really like auto-include as a term, but I think that people are sleeping on this card, and thank you, Peter, for pointing this out. I really like this card.
Definitely.
Let's move on to artifacts really quickly.
Yeah. So this is a personal favorite of mine. I might add that it's not like super good, but it reminds me of the lantern that lets you tap for any color. It's Mystic Skull. It's a colorless artifact for two colorless. One mana and tap, add one mana of any color. It's just a filter effect. But here's the kicker. Five colorless tap. Transform Mystic Skull into Mystic Monstrosity. It's a 5/6 artifact creature construct. Lands you control have tap, add one mana of any color.
Whoa.
I put this in Lord Windgrace just because it's more redundancy for color filtration. And you're just producing mana so fast, it depending on the deck you're running, of course. This just kind of catches people by surprise. And it's not a, again, it's not a catch-all card, but I have a particular fondness of this one.
Yeah, that's really a nice color filtering there, especially since you can do that as an artifact. It reminds me a lot of Prismatic Lens for that. It's the same mana cost, same effect. If you need to filter, you can, but then just the fact that then you can basically turn everything into a Chromatic Lantern or Command Tower. Actually, not in Command Tower, just a Mystic Mana Confluence. There we are. Yeah, being able to turn anything
Absolutely.
into that's really good. Next, one of those that I really liked, actually, oddly enough, was Stuffed Bear. It's a common that's just a two cost artifact, and you can pay two and turn into a 4/4 green bear artifact creature until end of turn.
I'm
Nick,
sure.
I know that you faced off against my Karn deck a couple of times.
Yeah.
I just really love these kinds of effects where I just like plopping down artifacts that can be animated into artifact creatures until end of turn. The ability to be able to drop down a two cost stuffed bear. And then on turn three, all of a sudden have a 4/4 bear that you can attack with or you can defend with. I think, especially in the later parts of games, it's nice to always be able to have a little bit of a combat trick up your sleeve. So the ability to have an artifact like this that, you need to pay something into it, but if you absolutely have to, you can turn this into a repeatable blocker too, especially if it's late game, you just need something to block, and if it doesn't die, the damage will just wear off and it returns to being an artifact. Next turn, it'll return to being a 4/4. I suppose, again, this is kind of Magical Christmas Land a little bit, but I think you could have this, if, as long as it's not attacking, you could have this block multiple turns if you have the right amount of mana.
Definitely. I've never actually seen this card before, but now that I'm seeing it, I'm thinking of Grant from Loading Ready Run, who runs Bear Tribal, Bear Force One. That card is hysterical. It's great.
It's also stuffed, so it's not technically alive,
It's not
but
technically alive. Could it be
it's fun.
a bear construct? A bear artifact creature, it says. I like Heirloom Mirror.
All
It's
right.
a discard outlet for one colorless and a black artifact. One mana, tap, pay one life, discard a card, draw a card, mill a card, and then put a ritual counter on Heirloom Mirror. Then, if it has three or more ritual counters on it, remove them, transform it. Debate only as a sorcery. So there are some limitations there, but it turns into Inherited Fiend. It's a creature demon. It's a 4/4 with flying and an activated ability that says two colorless and a black. Exile target creature from a graveyard. Put a +1/+1 counter on Inherited Fiend. So while that might not seem great in itself, it is a discard outlet, and it has amazing flavor, like playing Bloody Mary as a kid in front of a mirror at night. The flavor text says, speak my name thrice and will be rewarded. Well done, young fool. Well done. Now for your reward.
And it's really nice because it has that Skooze effect a little bit too. Is
Yes.
you can exile anyone, any target creature card from any graveyard for two and a black. So the ability to sabotage someone else's reanimation effect is also really nice.
So I know Bajuka Bog is like a mainstay in a lot of people's decks, but in my play group or when I pre-pandemic when I was playing at LGS's, a lot of people don't run Graveyard Hate. And that's one thing that's super unappreciated, and I'll hark on this over and over, that you need some sort of graveyard hate in your decks, because you don't know what sort of shenanigans your opponents are going to control, going to throw at you.
Yeah, that's why Tormod's Crypt is always really nice to have if you can find another spell slot for it. But what's really nice about this one, you're right, Nick, is the fact that you can just be running the mirror and discarding a card, drawing a card, milling a card. I mean, again, it won't last all that long, but if you just need one or two cards in the graveyard, draw a card, it's really nice. And, you know, a 4/4 flyer is not bad with the Scooze ability on it either.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a card right now, and I'm blanking on the name, but it's like pay two life or one black mana, and you can, like, remove counters from a permanent you control, and it buffs this artifact creature. It's from New Phyrexia, I believe. That there's some synergy if you want to keep using Heirloom Mirror as a discard outlet. Mm-hmm. I was also thinking you could easily flip it into Inherited Fiend with Proliferate effects.
Oh, sure.
And then and then you're not discarding too many cards.
Mm-hmm. It's almost easier to transform that card than to make sure it doesn't transform.
Yeah, definitely. As far as lands go, the land cycle is slow lands. Unfortunately, they don't have an identity of basic lands.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that it's made for, I guess, a little bit slower EDH, not necessarily the constructed formats, but I mean, maybe standard, but the fact that these end of battlefield tapped unless you control two or more other lands for, again, Battlecruiser Magic, that works perfectly.
Yeah,
for the Dimir color pairing, the Gruul color pairing, and the Selesnya color pairing, is that if you're in any of those color pairings or you have any of those in your deck, they're a little expensive right now, but they work so well. I mean, they really fit with previous lands of this type that we've seen. And even Haunted Ridge with Rakdos. I forgot about that one. They work really well, and these are definitely going to be lands people are going to be playing for a long time. So the prices, unfortunately, are probably going to go up.
It's due to standard. I personally think these, in Commander especially, I'd rather run Pain lands, but in multicolor decks, like, these are still technically budget options compared to your more expensive.
Oh, compared to Shock lands, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also happy to see Field of Ruin got a reprint.
Mm-hmm. That's always nice to have. Again, Field of Ruin, for those who don't know, tap to add a colorless. You can pay two and tap it, sacrifice to destroy target non-basic land and opponent controls. Each player searches their library for a basic land card, puts it on the battlefield, then shuffles.
There's Hostile Hostile.
Yep, Hostile Hostile.
It's a mythic land. Add colorless, pay one, tap it, sacrifice a creature. Put a soul counter on Hostile Hostile. Then if there are three or more soul counters on it, remove those counters, transform it, and untap it. Activate only as a sorcery. Turns into Creeping In, Monster House reference. Artifact creature, horror construct. So 3/7. This one got a lot of hype in previous season. Whenever it attacks, you may exile a creature from your graveyard. If you do, each opponent loses X life, and you gain X life, where X is the number of creature cards exiled with Creeping In. It also has colorless to phase it out of the game. This card is very cheap right now. I believe it's a few bucks.
Yeah, something like that. Let's see, each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is the number of creature cards, but it says you can only exile one. Or am I wrong on that one? It just says exile a creature card from your graveyard.
Yeah.
So it looks like you would only be able to do one damage and gain one life off of this, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Whenever it attacks.
Because otherwise it would say you may exile any number of creature cards from your graveyard.
Yeah, yeah.
Templating is a little weird on this one.
Its sap effect just gets bigger every time you attack, is my understanding.
Hmm. Oh, right. So it's every... Okay, yeah, that... Templating, people. Templating.
Yeah. I really love this card. On Card Kingdom, it's just a little bit less than $3. I'm sure you can find it even cheaper at your LGS or in a different store. I'm going to throw this into my Aristocrats deck, personally.
Mm-hmm. Just a very interesting card with a bunch of just nice little jokes, too. And before we end here, we just got to talk about how beautiful these lands are. These are amazing.
Yeah, I think these are my favorite full art lands that have ever come out. Looks like they got the same artist to do more than one.
Yep.
Because there's two of each color.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap up our episode for today. Thanks, Nick, for taking the time to talk with me today about the about these cards. There's a lot of really cool stuff in this set.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I love the content you make, and I hope to be invited back again or potentially play again with you on Spell Table.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to be on here, and I know we'll be playing again because that's what we do in the local play group. Anyway, if you're interested in listening to any of the podcasts that I've done previously on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find all of those on the usual podcast outlets. That's Google, Spotify, Apple, Player FM, and MTG Cast, and a whole bunch of other podcast outlets that I can never remember the name of. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity once again to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome patrons who have supported me over on patreon.com/mtgandquarantine. So again, another huge shout out to Nick S., who was just here on the podcast with me today, as well as Infamous Fridge, Neo Royal, Draco Lucian Anomaly, and Mr. Big Benz. Thank you so much for your support. If you'd like to help support me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgandquarantine for more information. And you've been listening to the MTG and Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.